For nearly four decades, Grammy-winning saxophonist Kenny Garrett has built a career that has seen him become recognized as one of the most versatile artists in jazz, with his ability to contextualize jazz, blues, and R&B within a world music framework. A Detroit native, Garrett got his start in music from his father, who was a carpenter who played tenor saxophone and exposed his son to the instrument. Upon high school graduation, Garrett was invited to join the Duke Ellington Orchestra, then led by Ellington's son, Mercer. The experience would develop Garrett's chops and teach him many important music and life lessons.
Well, the most important lesson I got with the Ellington Band, truly, of course, learning about Duke's music and sitting under, you know, people like Helmer Nerd and Norris Turner, who were the proteges of Johnny Hodges, and actually having the opportunity to play with Cootie Wims and playing with people like Barry Lee Hall Jr., who was Cootie Wims' protege, and playing with Chuck Connors, who had played with Duke. All these people had played with Duke. So that was the first start of it. But what I learned was from that was to blend with 18 musicians. And I learned to blend with 18 musicians. And later on in my career, it actually helped me to play with people like Miles Davis and Freddie Hubbard and Woody Shaw, because I wanted to be like one horn with them when I played with them. I wanted to be two sounds. It was just going to be one sound I'm going to play with them. So that was a great lesson that I got with the Duke Ellington Orchestra.
Garrett's tenure with the Ellington Orchestra would set the stage for later stints with jazz icons Miles Davis, Freddie Hubbard, and Woody Shaw, with Garrett adding something to his musical toolkit from each artist.
Well, Miles was the longest tenure, so I was there for 5.5 years. And when we started playing, I was playing with Art Blakey, so I was just going to check it out. I remember going to Art Blakey and telling him that I was going to go play with Miles. He said, "Well, God, you might learn something, you know." So I went and I played with Miles. And I've always had a story about my microphone with Miles. The first couple of gigs we played, my microphone wasn't working. And then eventually he heard me. I think we might have been in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And I remember playing with Miles. I got to back up a little bit before I play with Miles, because I have to make sure the audience knows that what I learned from Miles was important, is that when I played with Miles, he would play a line and I would play the line back. He never told me to do that. I just started doing that just by instinct. I just felt he played a line. I didn't know. I played it back, and that became part of the show. So I remember this, you know, after I got my mic situation together, I just, you know, that's how I really started learning the language. It was almost like an African tradition, because Miles would play the language and I would learn it. I would internalize that music, you know. So it was great for me to, you know, to be with Miles for 5.5 years and hear that language. I mean, because, you know, Charlie Parker stood on the bandstand with him, and John Coltrane, you know, they were my heroes. So I was just happy to just, you know, to have that opportunity. Well, they were different times. I think, you know, Miles was playing a different style of music at that when I played with Miles. Freddie was still playing standards and playing his original music, and he was fire. Mm. When we would go to play, I never heard him warm up. He would always go, "Thought away," play his high note, and then he would kick off hub tones or like, Freddie to me always came ready to play. But it was a different fire, and I played with Freddie before I played with Miles. And I always remember being motivated by Freddie, because I wanted to be able to play on that level. I remember my first gig playing with Freddie was in Chicago, and he was just firing up, you know. And so every night I was just thinking, you know what, I gotta get better. And every day I would just try to get better with playing with Freddie. But I think the main thing was that he was always trying to prove that he could play. He already could play, but he's always trying to prove that he could play. You know, and I found that really intriguing. He was always on top of his game. Oh, Woody Shaw. Well, I learned a lot from Woody harmonically. Woody was close in age. I mean, of course, he's still, you know, years apart. But I would hang with Woody, because he was in Newark, and I would pick him up and drive him around, and we would talk about books and life and music and things. So it was different. And plus, my roommates at that time, Tony Regas and Morgan Miller, they were playing with Woody. And so sometimes Woody would open up open up his set or his bandstand on a Sunday night, and then he would let me play. So eventually, when I ended up playing with Woody, He had heard me, but he wasn't really looking for an alto player. And then eventually, when I would hang out with him, his girlfriend really liked the way I played, and she would talk to him. And so I ended up playing in his band.
Armed with his experiences learning from jazz masters like Miles Davis, Freddie Hubbard, and Woody Shaw, Garrett would become a band leader himself, with his first foray being the 1984 release Introducing Kenny Garrett, the experience being another key period in his growth and development.
That was a great experience. Actually, another Detroit Cass alumni, Kurt Licey, knew my band director, Bill Wiggins. And at that time, I just moved to New York. And I guess Kurt had called Mr. Wiggins, and he asked him if he knew anybody who, if he could get in touch with this young student he had. And so he called me and told me there was a school teacher, a high school teacher. His name was Jerry Keegan. And he was the one who owned this company. It's called Crisscross Records. And Kurt recommended me for this record day. So I just ended up, I was always, working on music, even before I left Detroit. And I had plenty of songs, to present. And so that was a great honor just to, to be, 24 years old, something like that, doing my first record date.
Garrett would go on to enjoy a high-profile run of albums on Warner Brothers, which would solidify his status as one of the world's foremost jazz masters. He would later on secure a Grammy Award for his work with Chick Corea, John McLaughlin, and Christian McBride on the five-piece band project.
So it was kind of more of a kind of fusion vibe, and it was a great time for me because really, playing with John, I never played with John McLaughlin, so that was really good for me. And they were, the music was, different time signatures and was educational for me. But as far as the winning the Grammy, I just happened to be in California, and I called Chick, and I told him that I was in town. He said, come on down. We didn't know we were going to win, so I just happened to be there and ended up able to go up on stage with Chick at the same time. I guess a lot of the other musicians weren't available, but I was already out there doing something out there. And I ended up being able to, to go and accept the award with Chick, So it was great. It was great.
Garrett has continued to release groundbreaking albums that push the boundaries of jazz. His most recent offering, Sounds from the Ancestors, references the connected influences of his Detroit music roots and how they have impacted his sound.
Well, Sounds from the Ancestors actually is another, it's a reflection of Detroit. I wanted to, to go back to my roots, growing up, listening to a lot of the Motown sound and that feeling that I got when I used to, when I was a kid, I used to hide my my 45 and 78. And when Thanksgiving would come, I would start the process. I would start collecting the music and I would put everything together. And then when Christmas showed up, I would pull out all this music and I would play it and it would fill me up. And so I wanted to go back and I wanted to capture that feeling. And I was thinking about, the sounds of the ancestors, when I would listen to that music, and I wanted to be able to capture some of that, some of the vibes of those songs or that feeling that I had. And so it was important, because I, not only did I, I tapped into different sources, because during that time, I really wasn't, I hadn't really gotten introduced to the, the Afro-Cuban music. That was years later. But I was able to, I was playing with people like Chucho Valdez, so I was able to bring that experience. I was playing, with my own band, but I also wanted to, I've always been open to, this different style of music. It just, that's one of the advantages of Detroit, where there's so much music, to be exposed to. So I was always open to that music. But I think another thing that helped the record out was because of the pandemic, and I got a chance to slow down and to look at some of the things that I wouldn't been able to do, it was kind of like, usually we do a record and you have to finish it and you have to turn it in. So through the pandemic, because a lot of things were happening, we couldn't go in there. I could listen back and say, well, I want to add a vocals here. I want to do something here. I want to add a synthesizer here. And I think, it was basically about that, just really reflecting on my roots.
Detroit has long been known as one of the world's most essential music hubs and is recognized as an enclave that has produced some of the most important jazz musicians in the world. That fact is not lost on Garrett, who takes his role as one of the city's foremost jazz ambassadors seriously, representing the Detroit music scene throughout the world with pride.
Well, you know, I think for me, when you say you're from Detroit, usually there's just a lot of respect that comes in immediately. And then when they hear you play, that's another level. And I think for me, I was always trying to make my family happy. You know, I wanted my family to be proud of me. I wanted my teachers, Marcus and Bill Wiggins. I wanted people to know that I was representing Detroit, even if I didn't say that, because it's a certain level of musicianship that we have, you know, when you come from Detroit. And I always say it's, if people say, well, why is Detroit like that? I say, it must be something you wanted, but it was so many great musicians. And a lot of them didn't make it to Detroit. I was fortunate at the time I left, which I was very young, and I went and lived in New York, and I tackled it. So I knew I was representing Detroit because I was waiting for the younger generation behind me to show up. I was waiting years, like 10 years, like, where are these guys at? And because there's so much talent in Detroit, I knew somebody else would be coming sooner or later. But it took a long time, for like 10 years, and then eventually Carlos McKinney and Ollie Jackson, that group of musicians showed up. And then, of course, years after that, James Carter showed up. But for me, it's like I said, it's so much talent in Detroit. It just needs to be an opportunity for guys to, you know, to get to New York or wherever they're going to play. You know, they're going to go and just, you know, show that, you know, it's about the music. You know, it's, when you come to play in Detroit, you're not playing around.
Garrett is set to touch down and perform at the Detroit Symphony Orchestra on Friday, February 23rd, where he'll look to give the DSO audience an unforgettable music experience.
We always have a good time, so we're definitely playing music from Sounds from the Ancestors, because we were just there in September. We had such a fun time, great time really, because it was part of the NEA, you know, jazz. You know, we won the NEA Jazz Award with myself, Regina Carter, and Lewis Hayes. So it was very, you know, very special time. And, you know, anytime I come home to play, it's always something special because, you know, I'm always thankful for, you know, all the blessings that I was able to receive, you know, growing up in Detroit. And coming back to play is always that. I mean, I always want to play for the folks and, you know, show them, you know, what I've learned, what I'm trying to do, and I'm still representing, you know, Detroit. So I'm always happy to come home and play. So it'll be exciting. We're going to probably play some, you know, some tunes. We're going to definitely play Happy People because that's one that's requested around the world. But it just really depended on the feeling. But we're going to play. We're coming to play, you know, so I'm always excited to come home.
To stay updated on various tour dates, releases, and artist activities, visit KennyGarrett.com. To learn more about Garrett's upcoming show at the DSO, visit dso.org. This has been your edition of Mic Check. For the Progressive Underground, my name is Chris Campbell. We'll see you next time.